Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage.
Enterprise. Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Failing frequencies open, sir.
And we're back. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the newest episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Hoppen. Thanks so much for listening to us. Thanks so much for liking us on Facebook, facebook.com/Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Thank you for following me on Twitter, at Jay Hoffman. And thanks for everything. All right, good night. We're done. No. Now the show is about to begin. It's an exciting time because we're only a few short weeks away from Discovery. It's the end of the summer, beginning of the fall. But before we really dive into Discovery full blast, Warp 6, let's just take a moment or two to look back. I think we have one more interview, Brian, from the convention in Las Vegas this summer.
That is correct.
We have one more, and it's with a great guest. And there was one problem in Las Vegas.
Hey, what problem is that?
You weren't there.
Yes, that is correct.
You weren't there. So the sound guy, I don't remember his name. He was all right. I didn't really hang out with him too much. But he screwed up a little bit. So the interview doesn't sound that great, but it sounds okay, right?
You can understand the words. It's not pleasant sounding.
Our team of scientists are working as best they can to make the following interview not painful to your ears, but a couple things there's a confluence of things happening. Number one, it's a great guest and we want to have him on the show. Number two, right now it's like right before Labor Day and we've pre-recorded a bunch of other episodes and we've got nothing left.
Transparency on the Engage podcast.
No, I let it all out with my friends. We have three things in the can before Discovery starts. But we did two. We did Tim Russ last week.
That's correct.
We did half of Rainn Wilson, because you heard the opening last week. We got a mystery guest for next week. I don't want to spoil it yet. And then we got Rainn Wilson next. And then Discovery starts, and I'm going away, and everybody's on vacation. I got nothing to talk about. I got nothing to say, Brian.
And we've also been recording for about 3 hours now.
Yeah,
so,
I got nothing.
I think we're both a little winded.
I got nothing to say. But what's good is that I had a fun conversation with Rene Aubergenois, who's no joke of a fella. He's a golden guest. He's like he's Odo, for God's sakes. He's Odo. He was on 350,000 episodes of Benson. He's been in so many great movies. He was in McCabe and Mrs. Miller, for God's sakes. He was in MASH. He was has done a million things on Broadway. He is Gosford Park, I think he was in too. This guy is a genuine get. The problem is when we interviewed him, the putts behind the soundboard didn't do it right. But you know what? It's worth it. So this is a big windup to say the following interview is not of the pristine audio quality that you expect out of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast, at least especially when Brian is behind the wheel.
I'll clap for myself.
When this knucklehead out in Las Vegas, whose name I don't remember, he had tattoos all over the place. That can tell you what kind of guy he is. I don't trust
people. I have no tattoos.
Yeah, yeah. Tattoos, I don't trust guys with too many tattoos. You know what? You keep your tattoo on where you can't see it so that only your special intimate friends see. And then you reveal, guess what? Visible tattoos? I don't know. Little ones, maybe, like on an ankle. Those I like. Big tattoos all over the place. Give me a break. This guy didn't record it right. But nevertheless, we're going to listen to Rene Aubergenois. And this was very early in the morning also. So you're going to hear a tired Rene Aubergenois give kind of a perplexing interview because there were not a lot of people in the audience. But anyway, it was a lot of fun because it was like a first thing. So that's what's going to happen. What else is going on in the news? I don't know. Discovery's right around the corner. It's very exciting. Rainn Wilson, as you know, had the sweepstakes for his very generous charity. And by now, maybe the winner has been picked. So that's really cool. And that's what's happening. So you know what? Let's go in the Wayback Machine and listen to my chat with Rene. I hope, again, the quality isn't so hot, but it's good enough. And until then, we'll catch you next week. Live long and prosper.
Hey, Brian, are you there?
I'm here.
I got to let you know about something really cool, something that I've been carrying around on my person, right on my wrist. I just got a new wristwatch from Movement Watches. Do you know about Movement?
I do not. Please tell me more.
I got to tell you. These are wristwatches that look like $1 million, but they are not. They usually run around $95 or $100, and they look really, really stylish, really, really sleek. And what's exciting is that if you're a listener to this show, Engage, the official Star Trek podcast, you can get 15% off one of these really cool watches. They got dozens of them. They got them in chrome. They got them in black. They got them in like a rose gold. And, you know, to some of my listeners, folks, fellas especially, but the ladies too, maybe you're still rocking a digital watch from the 1980s. Maybe you're still playing Space Invaders at the arcade, listening to Rush. You might want to consider leveling up. And the way to do it is with Movement watches, because, Brian, I'm telling you, they look really sleek. They look like the kind of watches you can't afford, but you can. It's a small company. They started on their own. There were these two guys that wanted to have fancy watches, and they were broke and in college, so they started creating their own watches, and now it's a great company. So what do you think?
It sounds pretty great. I don't think I've ever worn a watch in my life, but you know what? Maybe it's time for that.
Dude, you check your phone?
I do check my phone, yeah, but you know what? It's my phone's too big. It's in my pocket. I'd rather just look at my wrist.
I 50% of the time don't wear a watch. And whenever I don't, and I need to know what time it is, and I'm sitting down, I'm in a car, I'm like digging into my pants to get my phone out, it's a pain in the butt.
And dangerous if you're driving.
Absolutely. So dig this. What you're going to do is go to movement.com. It's MVMT. It's very slick. I'm telling you, Movement. MVMT.com/engage, and that gets you 15% off. MVMT.com/engage. Check them out. You can't lose, and that's the deal.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
Unveil that tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff happening on this stage today, but this stage is a little bit different. This stage we're calling an inside Trek is going to be a little bit more like a fireside chat. A little bit unscripted, a little bit just hanging out, a little shorter than some of the other panels, and there will be a lot of opportunity to interact with you, the people who showed up here at 9 o'clock in the morning. And our first guest is Rene Aubergenois, who is...
Oh, he's got it.
What is Jordan using?
What? Can we get Jordan using then? Backstage?
There's two. He's got both.
Like I said, this is the mellow kind of hanging out stage. You know, it's not the microphone backstage. Stage. That's what makes it fun. It's the one with the red thing on the bottom. Unless you want to shout. I mean, Rene goes work in the theater. He can project to the back. No problem.
What are we going to do?
silhouettes.
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun on this stage all weekend. And you got to come back at noon for heavily interactive, computerized
Hit the space bar.
Star Trek trivia.
Hit the space bar.
Sign-ups are going to start at 11, back there by the soundboard.
So he's set up.
And it's going to be unlike anything we've done at the conventions before. But Renee, we wanted to start off with you because everybody loves you. And, and it's a lot of fun. But, you know, you're going to be talking about your Star Trek work elsewhere during the week. So this is an opportunity to talk a little, to get to know the real Renee, to get to know you inside. And
never going to happen. I am a character actor. And I am shy. And so I have a persona that sitting here now, pretending to be just take this for granted, sitting in front of quite a few hundred people.
I do have some slides though that I wanted to show because I want to talk a little bit about the work that you do on your website, where you are sketch artist. Can you see on the side there? And over there. And also a photographer and really interesting photographs. And please take this the right way, Renee, because you know that I respect and admire you. You take some marvelous photographs of garbage. I'm serious. I've been to your website and, oh, great, I see junk, and you find a way to make it beautiful, which is pretty remarkable.
That's a wonderful comment. It is, but it's not like I haven't heard something like that. I did some, there's a farm in the valley where I just came from up in Mendocino, and it's just a beautiful farm. It's like what Martha Stewart wishes she
could.
That's what her vision is. Anyway, it's absolutely genuine, and you can't take a bad picture there. There's so much beauty and the aesthetic of it is just perfect. Northern California, perfect. And I was showing the woman who owned the farm, I was showing her some of my pictures, and she looked at the one that I was one of my favorites, and she said, "That's amazing. That's our compost heap."
What is this over here that we're saying?
These are my cartoons. I think that's called My New Tie or something like that. I use rubber stamps, and it's all done on the computer with a Wacom tablet. They're just photographs. Wow.
Now, you're doing this not just for your own artistic fulfillment, you're actually raising money for various social causes with your
Well,
own.
That's true. that says sight unseen. I guess, definitely the reason I'm here is because of getting to meet you all, but it's also because of my commitment to an organization, Doctors Without Borders, and you know, if you want to show off, you go Médecins Sans Frontières, les poissons, how I love les poissons. Médecins Sans Frontières is it began in France. And I won the Nobel Peace Prize as an organization, I think in the late 90s, 96, you Google it. But they go into, in case you don't know, they go into all these conflict zones and natural disaster places and places overwhelmed with diseases, and they are all volunteer doctors and nurses and technicians, and they go into these areas that nobody else will go into. They can't. They're not prepared for that. And so it's an extraordinary organization. I mean, you know, they have like, they'll come into a place that's been ravaged by an earthquake with nothing left, leveled, and they will come in and they have inflatable hospitals and they have all this equipment too, and they just set up and get to work. And they're an amazing organization. And,
The work on your website, if people want to buy it.
Oh, yeah. I got it. Yeah. Sure, I do. I guess Marguerite Krauss. Blessed Saint Marguerite Krauss. And Mike and Aaliyah and Miri and the guys. Anyway, these wonderful people who have helped me do this. And yeah, if you go to the website, there are things. And if I'm given enough lead time, I will send you that.
When I ask about your style of drawing, how old were you when you first started to draw? Because you do have a very distinctive look. I mean, it's not.
I was totally. My grandfather was a very well-known and highly regarded Swiss painter. From Lausanne, the French part of Switzerland, and my father was a writer, but he was also a wonderful artist. So I was very influenced by that, but visually I was influenced by The New Yorker, which was a magazine that would appear weekly at our house. And I wasn't really into all the big articles and everything, but the cartoons, Steinberg and Steig, you know, who is the writer and illustrator of the Green, you know.
Which green guy you mean?
I mean the big green guy played in the what?
Hulk. Incredible Hulk?
No, cartoon.
An Orion? Are you talking about an Orion?
A cartoon, you know.
Shrek? Gumby?
What?
Who's green in a cartoon?
It's a real animated feature.
Shrek?
Yeah?
Correct. It was Mike Myers. Yes, that guy.
That guy.
Yeah, love him.
Well, William Steig created that character in his, and the book is beautiful. The illustrations, it's really wonderful. Really worth. I mean, as much as you might love the film, it is its own creature. But the book has influenced me as an artist.
Now, you mentioned a moment ago, you said, we're going to get to know the real you. Your instinctual response is, I am a character actor, which got a big laugh. But can you tell me, what does being a character actor mean to you? What is the phrase character actor? What significance does that have?
When I was dreaming of being an actor, and what that would mean I could do with my life, I always imagined, you know, imagining it what you hoped it would be. I always imagined that. I'm just losing the track of this thought.
Well, it is early.
It sure is early. Where were we?
You were dreaming of being an actor.
I always imagined that I would be known as an actor. It always amazed people that it was so different each time, that the characters were so different. And so I always thought that would be the thing that would be exciting to do, to surprise people that way. And then now I realize that although I've played a myriad of characters,
and I like to think that they're all different, they are all coming from this. You know, so there's only so much I can do. And if I see some of Clayton Endicott III in Odo, I go, oh, oh my God, how did that happen?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, there is a certain, you know, a chameleon-like effect of slipping into a film or a play and maybe not having the starring role, and there is an Odo-like quality to that. I mean, Odo was a little bit like a character actor in his shape-shifting ability.
Yeah. That was always my take on it. Yeah. That, yeah. He, fascinating character that, for me, when I read it, what it was and what he was supposed to do, I just thought, this is what I want as a character actor. This is an expression of playing characters, and etching a character is kind of dangerous because you're putting yourself out there. You know, when you were a kid after dinner and you went in and performed for your family or your friends in the sofa and everything, that's one thing, but then when you're really doing it, that's another thing. And I know I'm rambling here about being a character actor, and I'm trying to get to the root of it, of what I think about it in myself, because I really do think it has a lot to do with feeling more comfortable with a character, not separating you from the audience, but allowing you enough distance. I have such admiration for actors who can just project their personality. Katharine Hepburn, who I had the great fortune of working with, that's her. That's what she could do. I could never. I rarely have done that as an actor. I've always had a concept of a mask, and that also appealed to me about Odo, being able to hide behind the mask.
Well, you've done some remarkable roles over the years, and I don't always have the opportunity to speak to you one-on-one, so I'm going to take that opportunity to talk about some work you've done over the years that is always fascinating. And one thing was just something that just came out last year, a very small film called Certain Women, which you were in. If it's a 90-minute movie, there's 89 minutes of it with no Renee. You're only in it for a brief moment, but the movie is great, and then you show up and you blow it into the stratosphere, if I may say so.
Say that again. What? No, I didn't hear it.
I said that when you showed up, the movie just fell apart. No, when you showed up, it really blew into the stratosphere at that point. I thought that your character really was just so remarkable, and I'm thinking to myself, hey, that's my Star Trek guy, because I get excited when I see my Star Trek people in other movies. I think we all do. It wasn't a very successful, but I was just saying it wasn't very successful. It was not a big box office banana.
It was not designed to
be. It was made for about 89 cents. It was a very small movie.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Kelly Reichardt is a brilliant director. She makes these films, Wendy and Lucy, Michelle Williams with her dog Lucy, about a young woman sort of on the road. These are and Certain Women, with incredible cast: Kristen Stewart, Laura Dern, Michelle Williams, Jared Harris, James LaGrosse. I mean, just wonderful people. And then this fabulous young actress. Basically steals the film. It is the saddest film. And I know that is kind of a turnoff, but it is about such sadness. These people, there are like three stories. And I'm part of one. I'm in the middle, which is always good, because then you become, in a way, a fulcrum. And it's only one scene. It's a little longer than a minute.
It's because I wanted more. It's what I wanted.
I know. Well, that's the key to what I'm doing now. I don't want big parts anymore. I want to just say, oh, I see who this character is, and this is how I see him, and hand it to you. And, you know, whatever. I just turned down a film last night. I got the offer when I was laying over from up in Mendocino to come here. I was in L.A. waiting for the next flight, and I got this offer. And I'm not going, I just got an offer for a film. And so when I got to the hotel, they had PDF'd it to me, so I read it. And I was kind of hoping that it would be something that I would just love to do. As it turned out, it wasn't. So I just to be at this point in my life where I just go, no, I don't need to do that. I've done something like that. Or, you know, you get these things about, it's old hat maybe, but, you know, when you're trying to decide, you're just a working actor and you're raising your family and you're trying to decide what to do and how to maneuver your life so that you have a life beside the work. going deeper.
you know, you made a chicken noise a moment ago, and this is something else I wanted to bring up. You were in one of the strangest movies ever made, well, Brewster McCloud.
Right.
In 1969, 70, 71,
something like that. It was after MASH, after the feature film MASH. Yeah. It was Robert Altman's next film.
Yeah.
Brewster McCloud.
Has anybody seen Brewster McCloud?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so, only a few.
Well, MASH was a major success, and you made a number of film development. You made at least four. X amount.
I made MASH, Brewster McCloud, McCabe and Mrs. Miller, Images, and then I was sort of Where's Waldo-ish in The Player. He did that. Brewster McCloud, I was actually doing I had done MASH, and then I went from that to doing a musical on Broadway. You see, that was great, to go from this. That's what I dreamed about, being a character actor. Going from Father Mulcahy, Dago Red, creating that character, choosing the hat, choosing the demeanor, because the character didn't exist. Bob Altman said, what would you do if you were, a priest in a MASH unit? And I made up this idea of who I would make that character. And it was a shy, kind of bumbling guy, but with a heart of gold, and blah, blah, blah. And Bob liked that idea, so we went with that. But the next thing I was doing was this incredibly effete. I didn't think of him as gay. This is in the in 1970, so I didn't even... He was just a fop. He was just the most outrageous guy. And it was this musical with... Katharine Hepburn, how lucky can you get? And so that was the epitome. I'm wandering around, I know, but about being a character actor, that was living the dream. Yeah.
We have time for a few questions before we wrap things up. If anybody has an urgent, burning question they need to get off their chest and ask Renee, there is a microphone over here. If you just kind of want to keep it to yourself, you don't have to ask any questions. But you think about it, we have a few more minutes. But tell us a little bit about the crazy professor in Brewster McCloud.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I did wander off there. So I was doing this musical on Broadway, and then Bob called and he said, I have an idea for a character. He was shooting Brewster McCloud down in Houston, the Astrodome. And he said, I have an idea for a character, and we could shoot it all in one day. Can you get here? And I did. I went, like, on whatever the equivalent of a red eye was, down to Houston after my last show on Sunday. Got there some god-awful hour in the morning, and Bob met me, and we sat up the rest of the night writing this character who was a lecturer in the beginning of the film about birds. And he, every time they would cut back to this character, he was becoming more and more of a bird. And in the end, he's like crouched on top of the desk with feathers sticking out of him. And he's like,
It's a remarkable film, and it's...
You know what? I'll be candid with you. I went to a UCLA retrospective of Bob's work, and so much of it was so wonderful. But Bruce McLeod, it didn't quite hold
it's
up.
It's one of those ones that some people love and some people don't. And
yeah, it is true, the true definition of a cult film. It was sure fun to make, but I just think it was the 70s, you know. I think Bob was. I know he was. It was the 70s.
Excellent. Okay, so we have a few moments for some rapid-fire questions. So this gentleman right here.
Yes or no questions.
Did you love working on King Kong in the 1970s as well?
Asking you worked in the 1977 version of King Kong.
Yes, I was.
Giant production.
It was excellent watching you on screen. That's such a memorable movie. I thought you were excellent in King Kong.
Thank you. That was, when you're a character actor, it's like, that was the job that bought our first house. Job that sent my kids to college. So King Kong was a great gig. Got to be friends with Jeff Bridges and remain to this day, and his whole family. Bo Bridges' son Jordan is one of my kids' dearest bosom buddies. They're deeply connected, and that all trickled down being in Hollywood at that time. It was a lot of fun. And by the way, I think it was the so far I haven't seen this last one. I just think the reason it was good, if you liked it, and not everybody did, although some critics liked it and some people didn't, but if you liked it, it was because it was funny. It didn't take itself seriously, and that was a good thing.
We have time for another two questions or so.
So, Renee, you were talking about when you were designing the character for MASH, the priest, right? And how much influence you had on that. So I'm really curious to hear...
We lost you.
Back on. Go.
You hear me now?
Yeah.
How much influence did you have on Odo as a character? Was there a lot predefined on that character, or was it a lot of you actually building that character?
All right, yeah, well, that's a huge question. The simple answer to it is, and I'm sort of repeating myself in the world here, but the simple answer is when you get the script, there is a character on the page. The people who wrote it visualize it, have an idea of what that character looks like and sounds like, and because that's how they write. Because they have to sort of embody it. So they present you with something, and then you have to interpret it with your instrument. And so in the beginning, your job is really just to interpret it and not try to find your way into the character. And not try to find what they see and hear, because by the mere act of casting me, they already gave up a lot of what they imagined the character might be. You know, they thought it was going to be like a young Clint Eastwood. That is in fact how they conceived of the character. And then I came in as part of a casting session, meeting people, and they always, a good casting director throws in a clunker, something that makes, because if you see a whole bunch of young Clint Eastwoods, and you get like, so she She, Judy Lowry, threw me into that mix, along with other wonderful actors. And I walked in the room, and whatever my take on it was enough to make them reimagine the character. So then I just started playing the character, and pretty soon you begin to really dance with the writers, and they begin to hear what you can play, the music that is best for you to play. And they write for that if they're good. And these guys, Alex guys, mostly guys, were really good at it. So eventually, it becomes a real collaboration.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you know, we are just about out of time. If you have a question that can be answered quickly, we'll be able to sneak it in.
I have to do it.
Well, that was a good shot. Renee, you did such a great job as a director on Deep Space Nine with the 8 episodes you did. And after that, you never directed again, at least in film or television. I was wondering why it never came up that you could direct something ever
again. Yeah. I came to the conclusion that it was just not something that I, especially in the realm of television, I could only do that because I was embraced and supported by the family, starting with Rick Berman, who really pushed me into doing it. But I could never conceive of going on to another railroad train, which is on the tracks and going, and knowing what to do with it. So I did it, and it was great. I would say, I think I did 8 of them, and I always make this up every time I say this, but I think that of the 8, there were 4 that were okay, 2 that were not okay, and 2 that were I was really proud of. So, and that was enough. It was great. Thank you. Thank you.
Chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.